Welcome to Parents' Perspective. I found the perfect pet, one of my sons announced just before his baby brother was born. Since I'm allergic, so we can't have a dog or cat, I thought it would be nice to have an anaconda. A snake? I began to feel my knees buckle under me. But don't worry, Mom, he said as he helped me to a chair. They only squeeze small animals, so it can't hurt the baby. Does being a good parent mean we have to get our child a pet? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today, our guests will give us their perspective on children and pets. Ruth Hanessian owns a popular pet store, The Animal Exchange, that specializes in birds and small animals. She has three grown children, all of whom had pets, and still has birds at home and a dog who works with her at the store. Welcome, Ruth.
Thank you very much for having me here today.
Dr. Joan Barkin is a pediatrician who has two college-age children, two cocker spaniels, and tropical fish. She went through years of gerbils, guinea pigs, snakes, fish, and so forth, trying to avoid getting a dog. We're glad to have you with us, Dr. Barkin.
It's a pleasure.
Dr. Barkin, it seems almost every child wants a pet, but should all children have pets?
It's a totally personal decision. Each family has to come to this after some careful thought. Pets provide a tremendous amount of, fun, help, solace during difficult times. However, pets require care, and it's a big responsibility. It has to be decided beforehand where these responsibilities will be carried out.
Such responsibilities as?
It's endless, and it usually falls on the mother or the father to feed, clean, walk, change, etc. Children are very busy. Their activities consume a tremendous amount of time in their young childhood. And it's hard for them to understand the needs of a pet who really fully depends on the human factor for all the feeding, cleaning, changing, etc. It has to become a very big family discussion. The responsibilities are big in order to protect both the pet and the children.
Have you found that children have learned specific things from having a pet besides, you know, learning to do some of the care and feeding?
Absolutely. Children want to be responsible. They love to be part of the team. The nurturing component is inherent in both boys and girls. It does, however, require the parents' good judgment to determine, are these children capable of it? Do they have time? Will they carry it through? To purchase a pet just to force responsibility on the child is ill-founded. If the child has difficulty keeping up with all of their other tasks, the pet's going to be the last on the list. It is a time of important teaching. During childhood, the child is developing all sorts of skills. So organizing the time factor, making it possible, sharing the jobs between one, two, or three children, making the children aware that the parents have their responsibilities and may not have time if that child can't walk the dog.
What about the reality versus fantasy business about, you know, the kids who dress up the dog and put the dog in the baby carriage and the dog jumps out of the baby carriage because he doesn't want to be there?
Dogs love attention. Cats are a little more singular, but the dogs are certainly the most rewarding as far as return of affection. It's very hard to cuddle up to a goldfish. Dogs do love the attention. However, dogs are merely animals with a large set of teeth. If a 3 or 4-year-old is constantly pulling and poking at tails and ears, even in the best and most controlled families, we've had significant bites by dogs who are not problem pets. They're just fed up with being pulled and poked so much. So it is a huge responsibility. I often counsel my patients' parents to not consider getting a dog until the youngest child is between 6 and 8 years old, depending on the maturity of the child. By 6 or 7 or 8, the children can have more of an understanding that they can't pull, poke, and prod the dog. The dog is going to respond to defend themselves, and the 3-year-old doesn't understand that. A 7 or 8-year-old can be helped to understand that and be part of the nurturing, helping complex.
This brings us to our next question. Ruth, for a young child, what pets are best to start with?
Well, I'm always happy when someone will choose a guinea pig for a first pet. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about allergies later, but the reason I always suggest a guinea pig is that if this is a really young child, 4 or 5 years old, they can't cope with the responsibilities themselves over a dog or a cat. But a guinea pig in a cage is something that they can pat, they can take out, they can share with their friends, sitting down on the floor, so that everybody has a chance to handle the animal safely and securely. Most of the time when we see people come in and they want a pet for a 6-month-old or a 1-year-old, They're using the child as an excuse for the pet that they've always wanted. And once we have identified that fact, we really enjoy the people that choose pets for themselves, and then it's shared with the child as a side effect of the ownership. Children who grow up with pets, I think, have a much more caring and compassionate focus on the whole world. They have an animal that's part of their lives. They are able to see this animal when they're in trouble. They get unconditional love from this animal. You know that when you're feeling poorly, the first thing that happens is that the dog or cat comes and sits by your side and literally holds your hand. So to have a pet in the home is very important. To choose a pet for a child is a whole different issue. So guinea pigs are my usual favorite for a first small animal pet for people.
Okay. Now, should a young child be involved in choosing the pet, or how about these things where the parents are going to give the kid a surprise?
We try to discourage surprises. And what fascinates me is when the parent comes in first, picks the perfect pet. This child is going to want the black guinea pig. The child comes in with the parent, looks at the black guinea pig and says, "Oh no, I want the one over there that's white with pink eyes," or vice versa. Letting the child participate in the choice guarantees that the child will be more focused on caring for this animal in a constructive manner. So if at all possible, we suggest if it's a birthday or a holiday, give them the equipment, but let them choose the animal.
Dr. Barkin, you commented earlier that you don't recommend families get a dog until the youngest child is between 6 and 8. When is it a good idea for a child to start with other kinds of pets besides dogs?
I think in the toddler years, the 3-4 range, when they're beginning to be interested in other forms of life, such as goldfish are beautiful. They're fun to watch. They're very soothing for the parents, as long as they don't have to clean them too often. And it's a well-managed tank. Small animals at that time are very intriguing to the child. They don't require the amount of work and care that maybe a dog or a cat might cause. Cats are very much easier in many senses. And so if a young family with young children can have a cat, the cat's not going to bother the child for the most part. The cat doesn't want to be any part of that little person who's pulling and poking at his tail. So if the parents have a cat as a first child, I don't discourage that, because the cat usually will go by him or herself and not bother the child. The smaller animals, even to the point of small snakes and lizards and frogs and tree frogs, are quite intriguing for a young child. They really are intrigued by the natural world, and I think it's a wonderful way to bring it into the home, as long as they're well cared for. The dog provides more love in the sense of actual contact, but requires also much more work, and it's a safety factor.
What about families with allergies? I guess it's time to get to that. What suggestions do you have for them about pet selection?
Well, Dr. Barkin has just mentioned reptiles and amphibians, and those do not produce the dander that is characteristic of your furred pets. And so often, especially in the 7-8-year-old range, we have youngsters come in, they know they're allergic. They have been over to the friend's house. They cannot deal with the cat or the guinea pig or the dog at the friend's house. And they really want something of their own. Prior to 7 or 8, handling most of your reptiles and amphibians is really tough for a youngster. So we emphasize it's a look-at pet rather than a handle pet at that age. Once they get beyond 8 or 9 years old, particularly little boys are thrilled with the idea of a reptile or an amphibian. If they already have a pet in the home and there's allergy considerations, I'm sure Dr. Barkin will address the fact that not all the time do the parents take the pet out of the household. And so then we deal with trying to make it the least allergenic situation for the youngster. If we're dealing with a guinea pig or a hamster or something that is causing a problem, trying to get them to enclose it in an aquarium with a screen lid rather than having an open wire cage helps. Encouraging them to wash the animal more frequently. Or there's even commercial products for allergies that you can put on the animal that will reduce the dander that's causing the allergy problem. Too often, though, we're on the end of this conversation where, you know, the doctor said we have to get rid of it, but we're not going to. Or even worse, yes, we're allergic, but this will be okay. And it isn't. So try not to involve your children with pets that are going to cause a problem when you know, in fact, that's going to happen. Don't let them get attached. It's a tremendous emotional trauma for them when the pet has to be taken away.
What about people who say, oh, but this is a hypoallergenic dog? Is there such a thing?
I say no. There are dogs that have less fur that flies around. There are dogs that have less dander. But certainly, I do not consider any animal that is furred a hypoallergenic animal, including the hedgehogs, which have been touted very much as being hypoallergenic pets. When you handle them with their little spines, it's interesting. You sometimes will see that you get swelling after the spines have been on your hands.
Doesn't seem like a very cuddly pet to begin with.
No, but they're fascinating. But I try to encourage people, if they want an animal that is not going to be an allergy problem, to consider fish especially, because then you have the humidity increased in the home, which is usually good for children that are allergic.
Dr. Barkin, what kinds of care do pets need in general, and who should be responsible for the care?
Well, it really has to be something that the parents, first of all, agree upon. Now, that's difficult in child raising. Each parent comes from a different child raising set, and so they have to work together on this. I think the biggest problems occur when the pet, especially a cat or dog, are the first children in the family. Often young couples have purchased, acquire a dog or a cat during their early married life before children. Introducing the children to this set is sometimes very difficult. The cat, of course, is a more allergenic animal only because its saliva flakes and gets into the air and the soft products of the house and creates a lot of irritation. But the cat is actually a more individual animal and doesn't cause so much trouble for a young child. It doesn't want to enter the child's space usually. The dog, however, is in everybody's space and really is a very playful, rambunctious animal, friendly, wants to be right in the middle of everything. That presents a great problem for the young child, young baby, and I often caution the family never to leave the child and the animal in a room alone together. It's just too problematic. Young pets are like young children. They require a tremendous amount of care and attention, everything from house training to taking care of their hygiene, their feeding. They are young children. And so a mother with young children is not going to be ready often. Mother and father are not going to be ready to take care of another under 2-year-old at the same time. They're teething on all the furniture. They're scrambling around the house, soiling all of the carpets and furniture, etc. So a family has to think long and hard about whether they're willing to take on this responsibility. Even a 6 to 8 or older child has difficulty managing the very young pet. They are a lot of work. So this has to be a real family decision. Pets, and there are many books and tapes and sessions that will help us train the pets early on. There are some wonderful patterns now for helping to train your pet, both house training and people training, helping that pet to be more a part of the family in a safe way. So there's a lot more available for us as families and adults to teach both ourselves and our children how to care for these pets. But you have to pay attention. If you don't do it right in the beginning, that pet can become very difficult only because they're fearful and frightened and reacting to a difficult situation. So it requires some focus.
And some of the focus that people have is inappropriate. They decide that it is not a good thing to crate a dog because that's cruel. Well, what's more cruel is having a dog that does, as Dr. Barkin says, soil all over the house and ends up at the shelter instead of being part of the family. It teaches the youngster at that point that the commitment that the parents had to an animal, substitute child, is not an ongoing one. And so we truly encourage people to get into training classes with any dog that they happen to acquire, regardless of how well they think they can train it themselves, so that it's in a socialized situation with lots of other people and lots of other animals. It's very, very important that these animals function in the family in a constructive manner, not cause problems for the children with separation down the road. So it's a responsibility of the parents to do that training.
Friends of ours have a young German Shepherd, and the German Shepherd went off to doggy camp to be trained and came back and understood German commands. They said, well, this is a German Shepherd, and it was used to this, and so they had to learn German words in order to command the dog.
Love it.
And it is very breed-specific. Following a certain movie production about Dalmatians, the purchase of Dalmatians skyrocketed. Mm-hmm. Dalmatians are not appropriate dogs for young children. They do not deal well with a child pulling and poking at them. There are other breeds that deal better with that. Dalmatians do not work well with young children. And as a result, in a year or two after that episode, the Humane Society and the pounds are filled with Dalmatians that families couldn't cope with. This is a disaster. A family really needs to focus on a breed and a specific breeder or facility that provides an animal that does work well with children.
How do families go about finding that out?
They can speak with someone like Ruth. Ruth has an endless source of information and background about these issues. A veterinarian, a training group that works with dogs all the time and understands. And even if you have chosen a particular breeder on the recommendation of some of the good people, having that dog brought to one of the specialists to observe, will this dog work well with children? Because people train, such as Ruth or a veterinarian, can really sense whether this dog will do well with young children.
The other thing we always encourage prospective dog owners to do is go to a facility that has more than one breed. There's never a puppy that isn't perfect. They all are adorable. And if you're going to a breeder of Irish setters, you're going to find an Irish setter puppy that's just irresistible. If you go to a facility that has more than one type of dog available, it gives you a chance to expand your perspective without having to have that puppy the first time you see it. Certainly we encourage you to read. Certainly we encourage you to talk to other people who have that breed that you're interested in. And you can usually narrow it down to some extent. Personally, I started out with a mutt and then went to a Yorkie and then went to an Irish setter and then went back to a mutt. And so I've run the gamut. And each animal has its own advantage. I naively thought that if I got a small dog like a Yorkie, it would not be underfoot. This particular Yorkie was very happy underfoot, so did in fact not do what I thought it was going to do. But choosing a breed because of it being a puppy is not the way to do it. Choose a breed that you know the characteristics of the adult. A herding dog like a Boxer or a Briard is going to be good with a small boys that are out in the yard that need to be watched. Actually, they can sometimes serve as the nanny a little bit.
And Ruth brings up a very interesting point. Often getting the so-called mutt sorts out some of the inbred errors, and some mutts are very intelligent dogs. They do not have some of the physical problems that some of the purebreds have. Each of these has to be looked at carefully, each of these issues.
Sounds also like the parents really need to be the ones that decide what kind will be gotten and then let the child choose maybe the individual one.
That's correct.
Okay. Good idea.
All right. In terms of training, Ruth, you were talking about this a minute ago. What kinds of resources would you recommend?
Well, certainly you start with a book, and you read the book and you follow it. I have one that I like real well called Super Puppy from a trainer on the West Coast. We have all sorts of classes that are available. Most humane societies and most county municipalities have professional training classes that are offered on their schedule of adult activities. There's also clubs that will provide training. So getting into one of these group situations, whether it's a commercial venture or whether it's a club-type environment or a resource that's provided by the municipality, you get the exposure to other animals. And your animal will be amazingly well-behaved when it's in class, which always fascinates me.
Terrific.
Even though it may not carry over to home 100%, especially if you have young children.
What would you say are the most popular pets today?
Well, more and more today, people are not going to dogs, but rather going to cats, which do not require the walking and the attention, so that our population of cats has, for the first time, exceeded the population of dogs in this country. Remember also that many people are multiple cat owners. But in urban areas where walking an animal or disposing of waste is a problem, we see more and more people focusing on birds. Small birds are what we recommend initially for young children, especially if the kid's voice is still high-pitched. I always laugh because people say, oh, can it learn to talk? And I say, well, nobody's ever learned to talk from my voice because it's not high-pitched enough. But a 5 or 6-year-old voice will teach a parakeet how to talk quite easily. And so we encourage parents of youngsters who are not going to be able to make the commitment for dog and cat care to consider something like a parakeet. As always, hamsters and gerbils are there, and they're a very good choice. We have all different kinds and colors now, and so it's sort of exciting watching people come in and make their decisions on what to have. And don't forget rats.
Rats
make wonderful pets. Some of our best families in the neighborhood are the owners of pet rats. Very smart, very, very good pets.
We believe you, but we're not rushing out to get them today.
We will discuss reaction to them, too.
Dr. Brocken, could you describe any situations where pets were helpful treating a child with some kind of maybe an emotional or special need?
Well, indeed, the reference to the fact that there is totally committed love by a pet. A pet does not mind. You come home at the end of the day and they run right up to you. They are there. A young child is crying in his room. Who rushes to him? The pet. We had a particular close contact with this in the death of a grandparent, and the dog served as the real comfort factor. They do provide comfort in their non-judgmental, totally committed affection for the people that care for them well. So the pet does provide a wonderful source of love. This is especially important for children who have special needs, children who may not be able to get out of the house much or spend much time with other children on their sports teams and other types of activities. The pet provides a buddy, and there are many, many cases of this, but we see this even up to the geriatric level. The pet does provide a tremendous support.
We'd love to hear if you have any favorite pet stories you could share with us.
I have many. We have had many pets during the years when my children were asking for dogs and I said it's not safe yet. We went through a wonderful assortment of beautiful finches and rabbits and guinea pigs and gerbils and snakes and frogs, and we had a wonderful time. When my children finally wore me down, and my daughter was 7, my son was 10, we purchased 2 Cocker Spaniels. My decision that they would be keeping each other friends during the day, they would not be lonely. My husband was ready to have me committed. Basically, one of the first things my daughter did was, of course, try to dress up her little dog and put rubber bands around her ears with bows on them. Fortunately, we checked on her, this was late in the evening, we checked on her even later to find that one ear was literally 3 times the size of the other ear. The rubber band was still on the ear. Well, total family panic. My son slept with the dogs all night. My husband was just totally distraught. He was sure the dog was going to lose her ear. The dog's ear recovered beautifully. The dog never cried. The children were even more attached to the dogs and vice versa. It was a wonderful moment of reckoning.
I think one of my favorite stories was from a situation where there was a group home with children, and one of the youngsters was autistic. They would bring the kids into the store, and this one individual was fascinated with the fact that the birds could talk. He was not communicating himself at all, and the offer was made to have a parakeet go and live with him so that he would perhaps be able to develop his verbal communications. I think that the potential help that pets can provide is not just the working animals, which are amazing to watch, the assistance animals that are trained to help the Parkinson's folks and the epileptics, but rather what you see in the relationship that every individual has with a pet. It's really heartwarming. If this animal can provide the unconditional love that is needed when mom and dad may be a little on the short end, this is going to provide a much more secure environment for any individual.
Our guests, Dr. Joan Barkin and Ruth Hanesian, have certainly helped us with our pet peeves. Thank you both for being here. A new feature on Parents' Perspective is our listeners' polls. Please note our toll-free number, 1-800-791-8573. That's 1-800-791-8573. And give us your response to the following 3 questions. In your household, what is your biggest worry? What are the ages of your children? And of the Parents' Perspective shows you have heard, which show did you find the most helpful? There's no need to leave your name or phone number if you'd prefer not to, but we're eager to hear from you. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective.
If you have comments, questions, or suggestions for Parents Perspective, you can call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 or email us at parentsper@aol.com or contact us care of this station. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.